Welcome back to Three Black Docs with Dr. Tiffany, Dr. Karen, and Dr. Zanetta.
Tell me about this Eating Well article.
So, okay.
That you texted us about, all caps, exclamation marks, in the middle of a day.
Yes.
In the middle of a work day.
Yes. So I went to the mailbox, got my latest issue of Eating Well, and the featured article, this is when I texted you guys, the featured article in Eating Well was about food insecurity, poverty, mm-hmm. and social inequity, and how it all ties into food insecurity and chronic conditions like diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. And so the reason I was so excited about it is, you know, because I get Eating Well to just get recipes, you know, so I can think of new ways to cook my veggies and, you know, mm-hmm. just new recipes and shake things up. So I was not expecting a whole, like, social determinants of health featured article in Eating Well. I think I'm gonna write a letter to them. I really do. But they did a great job of breaking down. Actually, they focused on poverty. So they did a great job talking about socioeconomic status and poverty as it relates to food insecurity and as it relates to affording healthy options, which we talked about before. But they did a really nice job of breaking down like the cost per serving of foods and comparing healthy foods to, you know, the processed stuff, and how, by and large, of course, the processed stuff is cheaper per unit. But the three cheapest foods on the list we also talked about, okay. and those were eggs, cooked cereals, like oatmeal, mm-hmm. and beans, nuts and seeds. So those were the three cheapest, but then everything else was like processed stuff, you know, sort of in the cheapest range. And then the most expensive stuff was fish and shellfish. So again, yeah. the things that are like best for yeah. you, right? But the thing that I really liked about the article was a couple things. They started to delve into some of the newer research around food deserts, right? So this paragraph was entitled "The Food Desert Myth."
Okay.
And this is when I was like, oh, I got to get my good pen out that I got specifically for me to write stuff, right? I got a good pen.
A good pen.
With a fountain. You got a good pen.
No, like a fountain pen, you know, with ink that runs on
oh.
things.
Yeah, like a pen. Potter. A pen.
Yes. Okay. Go, where you got to get the refills and all
Bellatrix.
That.
Oh,
okay.
All
right.
That's right. So I got my good pen out to take notes. So what they were saying is that there are a few studies out that are coming out, which are looking at interventions around putting markets into food deserts and kind of following up at a year and seeing if it actually increased people's fruit and vegetable intake. And at least in one of these studies, it didn't. So the thought from that was that it's not about availability, but affordability, which is what we've touched on before. Now, this was only one
study. Isn't availability a part of affordability? Because we talked about that in insurance, right? So, like, or is it just saying that, is it proximity is not the same as availability?
That proximity is not the same as availability in terms of, right. Yes, exactly.
Because, you know, just because something is sitting right next to you doesn't mean you have access to it. We talk about that all the time when we're talking about healthcare. Because just because you have a world-class institution that's sitting right in your backyard, we happen to interview someone who's in Boston where they have amazing cancer centers, but not everyone has access, even though the uninsured rate is less than 4%. So there are people who have insurance who still can't access that. So I like the idea of saying proximity is not the same as availability. Yeah.
So they're putting up these little markets. So basically a little pop-up shop in the middle of the neighborhood. Is that what you said? You said these markets.
No. There was one. I'm just talking about one study they alluded to. So what they're saying is, the question is, does it solve the problem to put a supermarket in a food desert if the food is still unaffordable?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that.
That's the question.
Okay.
And so.
And the answer is no.
At least in this one study, the answer was no.
Yeah.
And so they really did put a spotlight on poverty and socioeconomic status. There was another study that they referenced that was done in Seattle, and they looked at the greatest determinant of poor health was not race, age, gender, any of those things. It was the value of your house.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, which, I mean, it makes sense.
Again, that's what determines. Right.
Yeah, we just talked about redlining. We had a whole conversation about redlining.
We know this stuff, but this is the importance of research. You know, this is the importance of being an academics, Karen.
I feel like
you need to be able to point to this and say, these are the real issues and this is the real root of the problem, so that we know what the real root of the problem is, right?
Here's the deal. People know what the real root of the problem is. I think you're right. I think the value of having a paper that says it is that now it's in writing.
Exactly.
So I'm with you.
Exactly.
And again, I've had a mentor when I was at Mass General who all the time would say, Wingfield, you're doing amazing work, but nobody knows what the frick you're doing. You got to get it out there. This is important work. But I was like, no. And so you're right. I think until it's in writing, there is less legitimacy to it.
Yes.
But I just feel like half the time when you think about how papers get published, the reviewers don't know what the frick they're doing. And so I can't tell you how many papers I've tried to submit that get turned down because the people who are reviewing don't have a clue.
But this is why I was so freaking excited to see this show up in my mailbox in Eating Well. Because this is Eating Well. This is not, you know, an obscure medical journal that the three of us are going to read and that's it. And maybe we'll talk about it on the podcast, right? This is like a mainstream magazine that I get for recipes, which has a featured article on social determinants of health and poverty and food insecurity and how it relates to diabetes and hypertension. And they even mentioned how those conditions are underlying what we're seeing in the COVID pandemic and the unequal death rates.
Right.
So,
yes.
They did an amazing job in the middle of Eating Well. I mean, they really did. I'm going to write them a letter.
What were some of the other myths that they dispelled?
Well, that was one paragraph.
That was one paragraph.
And the reason they titled it that was because there is an idea that, okay, you've got these food deserts where, you know, you've got more fast food than fresh food. And so we'll fix it by putting supermarkets there. And the argument was that the solution to just put supermarkets there is palatable to people, right? Okay, we'll put a supermarket there. But what happened is you put it there and people still couldn't afford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can't afford what you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I can tell you, it's fascinating. When we were in Boston and, you know, we lived in a part of town called Jamaica Plain, which used to be like a poor area and really had an upswing like most of Boston had. But we had a store there that was called Hilo. And it was a store that had affordable, not only fresh fruits and vegetables, but even canned foods. Like, look, canned sardines, ain't nothing wrong with having some canned fish every once in a while. Like, if you can't afford the fresh stuff, get the canned stuff.
Yeah.
They had like octopus. They had all these kind of ethnic foods and things like that. Do you know they wanted to shut down the Hilo to put in a Whole Foods? Mm. There was a whole people were up in arms because the community, JP, was very diverse. We had a lot of, you know, Hispanics that were in the area, a lot of immigrants that came into the area. But what was fascinating is, of course, they had the hearing, and this is where policy, and I've talked about this before, they had the hearing about whether or not they would allow the Whole Foods to come in at some obscure time, some obscure place, where the community members who are going to be most impacted were not able to attend. That was purposeful.
Wow.
And do you know, within a year, they had a Whole Foods up in that place. And I can tell you, I used to go to the Hilo to get certain things. I stopped going because the Whole Foods was ridiculously expensive, as you know. So just having a grocery store isn't sufficient. It's about what is it that you're bringing to that grocery store? How affordable is it? You know, what sorts of opportunities are there for the people in the community who are around to kind of make sure that they can capitalize on it? That's why I feel like farmers markets are the bomb. Let me tell you something. The
I love a farmers market.
Right. And that's why when you were talking about putting the markets in the communities, I was like, oh, they're putting like a farmer. That's what I had in my head. And I was like, well, that sounds promising. But
farmers markets are, you know, before COVID hit, I would go every weekend fresh food. To farm. Local, you know, picked that morning. You can't get better than that. And usually always way cheaper than what you get in the store. So if I wasn't growing it myself, I was going to the farmer's market.
Here's the other thing about food insecurity though, Tiff. It's about educating communities who have not had access to fresh fruits and vegetables about how to utilize them or what they taste like. So that was part of what JD used to do. You know, Chef Jeff used to go into these communities. He'd go to the community health centers. He would teach young people and their parents, if their parents were around, because he would try to do these around 6 o'clock when the parents were coming to pick up kids. He would do cooking demonstrations to show families how to cook fresh foods, inexpensive meals. You know, could be a one pot meal. It could be a couple, whatever. But he would try to introduce these kids to foods that they might not have ever had an opportunity to experience. You know, I remember growing up, I hated Brussels sprouts. Do you know why? Because my mother got the canned ones and they were nasty and soggy and disgusting. And I couldn't stand them until I actually experienced a fresh Brussels sprout. What the heck? Right? There's such a huge difference.
Best veggie ever.
But when you think about what happens in poor communities, they were relegated to getting these canned fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be corn, peas, I don't care what it is, but it's all mushy and nasty. The nutritional value is decreased and diminished. Even the frozen vegetables are a little bit more expensive, so you end up paying more. So this is really where the social determinants of health are so important in terms of thinking about how do we improve community well-being. It's not just about slapping a grocery store. It's about educating as well about, okay, let's see a Brussels sprout on the stalk, right?
Yes.
And how do you manage that? You know, there's some education that comes with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the other thing that I like that they did in the article is they gave an example of a hospital in Pennsylvania, Geisinger, which started a program of providing, they write scripts for fruits, vegetables, healthy meals, but then they also provide the food and they follow the effects of that program on hemoglobin A1C levels in diabetics and showed across the board that in fact they all declined because, you know, people were eating the food and improving their diabetes. And so they
and that is much cheaper than these diabetic medications.
Well, but no, but they also linked it to hospital cost, which with every point of decline in hemoglobin A1C of how much money it saves the hospital system.
Absolutely.
And so that data and that study was also referenced in the article. And apparently that study, that program was started on a small level, but they're talking about, you know, expanding it because to be able to tie it to where you're saving money. And I mean, again, you know this stuff, but you've got to prove it.
No, right? But here's the deal. Why should you have to prove that there's a financial incentive? We talked about this in the past. Why should we have to prove that there is a financial incentive for the institutions to just do the right thing? Because shouldn't it be like this is what we need to do? It's a social justice issue. Like, right?
But when have we cared or prioritized social justice? Remind me of a time.
Lee, you're killing me.
I'll wait.
But that's the thing. I mean, we're at the point where you can actually tie this into financial benefits, health benefits for people.
Yes.
Everybody wins. Win, 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 just by doing the right thing. Yeah. Mm. Crazy.
Yeah. Mm.
It's crazy. Mm.
Love it.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Want more Three Black Docs? Visit 3blackdocs.com to meet the docs, read our blog, and get access to more 3BD content.
I love the idea of the prescription for the fresh fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as we're talking, I'm just thinking about just growing up where I did in Louisiana. I mean, there wasn't, I mean, the store that we primarily went to, there weren't a ton of fresh fruits and vegetables. Like, if I really thought hard enough, I probably was pretty close to a desert. Mm. You know, there were so many learned things. Honestly, it wasn't until medical school that I really became more acutely aware of nutrition and how it impacted things. I still remember when I had my first bagel. Like, I was old enough to like, oh, bagel and fruit. Like, I was pretty old. Normal. I mean, there's just a lot of meat, a lot of pork, bacon, fried. I mean, you eat Popeyes. I mean, we probably eat Popeyes once or twice a week.
Oh, really? You're a small family.
Yeah. And so it's normal. Like, so you don't know that things are abnormal until you're in a different environment.
But it's not even about normal or abnormal, right? So it's about affordability. So there were eight of us in my family. And so my mother, we didn't go out to eat at all, like very rarely, because we couldn't afford to, right? Because there were eight of us. So we did go every once in a while. My dad would take us out to a Chinese restaurant on a Sunday because we lived in a Jewish neighborhood. But we had government cheese. You know, we had, you know, the generic cereals, then that white box with the red and blue stripes. It was food, but the nutritional value, right? So it wasn't even about like, I mean, I just feel like we had to eat the same thing over and over again because that's all we could afford. My parents had chicken almost three times a week, you know?
And see, for us, it was also time because we were all so busy that. Because I think it was less, a 12 piece with, I mean, that's not cheap.
So was your mother working?
It was. So my mom, when I was in the seventh grade, my mom started college. So she was working full time, still church stuff, and she started night school. So she didn't graduate from college until the year before I graduated from college. So she.
Yeah. So it's a little bit about family structure too, because like my mom quit her job because she used to work for the governor of New York. My mom quit her job so that she could take care of family. And so she actually became a full-time mom. And so she was home. She would make breakfast, lunch, dinner. Like, you know, that's what she did. She took care of house. So it was a little bit different for us. But what became apparent is that we couldn't afford, you know, like fresh fruits and vegetables. We rarely had that. A lot of stuff was canned, you know, a lot of things was processed and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little bit different. So I understand the time constraints because that's what's happening nowadays, right? So
right. It
I gotta remember
time.
You're younger than me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's time. So you're so much younger than me. There are families even now today where the parents are working two and three jobs just to make ends meet, just so they can pay for rent or mortgage and they don't have jobs. Yes, T.
Okay, I went to get the magazine because I wanted to get this right. I thought I remembered, and actually I did remember correctly, but it was good to verify. So this issue of time was also addressed in the article because there was a study by Tulane University, my alma mater. Thank you very much. I have not looked up the paper myself. I will, but it was referenced in this article.
I roll big time, as in roll wave,
I will take it. They did a study of how long it would take per week to prepare a menu of the healthy meals recommended by the USDA, not including shopping or cleanup time. Would you like to take a guess at how many hours a week? Not including shopping or cleanup.
10 hours.
So we're saying prep? Or prep, cooking,
to prepare a menu of the healthy meals recommended by the USDA, not including
10 hours a week.
2 to 3 hours.
No, 16 hours a week.
See?
Now, again, I have not pulled the study that was the source.
16 hours.
I'm taking what the journalist who wrote this article said until I verified myself. But
that's
16
why I don't cook, because,
hours a week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I don't cook.
Up to three.
Because it could take an hour to cook dinner. Right?
As many hours as the average working woman spends in the kitchen.
Yeah. And see, I don't even know what the USDA thing says. But I don't know where you find 16 hours.
And I want to pull this study to see what, you know, like what the methodology was and what they were looking at. But
no. But think about it, Tiff.
That's a part-time job.
Yeah.
But Tiffany, think about this.
Crazy.
Tiffany, you think about 7 days a week. You think about how much time you spend, because I know you actually cook. Gee, yeah. I don't know if you might cook too. I don't cook. I'm like, okay, what can I do fast, right? Tiffany be sitting there and spending time, and you know it takes sometimes an hour and a half to 2 hours to get your meal on the table. That's
yeah,
just
it does.
For dinner.
You're right.
That's just for dinner. So,
you're right.
So if you do that 7 days a week, that's 14 hours right there.
You're right.
And see, we do two big meals and do leftovers.
You know how I do it? I spend a lot of time on the weekends. But if I think about it, I prep a lot. I used to chop all my stuff on the weekends. Now I'll buy it pre-chopped where I can. But again, that's expense.
Yeah. I was going to say that's more expensive.
I'm paying
my more
time.
Expensive.
Right.
But that does save a ton of time. But to buy a chopped Trinity is expensive. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I look at the price
and
I'm like,
boy.
You know, this cost this will
$3.99
for $2 for all
yep,
this.
Like, oh well. Look,
but
oh
I
well.
Have
I'm
the
gonna
time.
Save me some dang time. There you go.
But to make a jambalaya, it's gonna take me 20 minutes to throw that together versus chopping all this stuff, right? But that's expense, right? And it's taking time on the weekends doing all this stuff. So you right, that's like real labor. And now working from home, you know, remembering to put a pot of something on it, one or two or something, or, you know, it's a lot. I did not see it. I had never seen it quantified before like that. So I am going to pull that study because that's fascinating to me. I mean, they hit the issue of time. They hit the issue of waste in terms of buying stuff just to expose your kid when you know that kid is going to eat it.
Okay,
I have a bag of Brussels sprouts in my refrigerator.
My life.
Oh, it's not good.
Threw it away and bought another bag.
No. Okay, so first of all,
you should
have throw them in the oven. Yeah, I was like, girl, please don't do that. Because I can eat a whole bag by myself. So that's a whole other thing. But, but not even that, Tiff. It's just about even like and it's one thing to try to expose your children to different foods. But the other thing is that there is a lot of waste in our country just in general.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes it's like, you know, first of all, I don't feel like the fresher the food we can get, the better, right? And so we sometimes we'll buy stuff in the grocery store that's a little bit outdated. I'm guilty. I'm like, oh, look, there's a $2 coupon. Let me go ahead and get that, right?
Sure.
And you go ahead and get that bag salad and the stuff is rotten and wilted by the time you get to it.
All the time.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's about time. But we don't have the time to go shopping every day. So we go shopping once a week and we have the stuff sitting there and then it goes to waste because we're not using it fast enough. That's the challenge with us being working people where we're not out there farming. We're not out there in the fields. So, you know, we go shopping once a week and sometimes stuff goes to waste.
And then, you know, we've purchased a lot of things to try to save time. So we have this Ninja Grill, which I actually love. But then we're grilling food a lot. That's not necessarily, I mean, not the way we grill it is probably, we're probably getting a lot of, you know, you don't want to have grilled meats every day.
I was like, are you burning the food? Are you burning
it? I like a nice crisp. But I'll marinate it. And it's, there's just like a nice, you have your pork chops. Oh, they're so tender. But
I don't hear this.
I know. But Tiffany, I mean, I feel this is, it's like 10, 15 minutes as opposed to the amount of time we used to spend.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, but
now
it's like this can't be. It's increased, how much, like, we're grilling, I'll put vegetables in there. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm losing all of my nutritional value by the time we take it out.
Because you are.
Right? But I don't know. You know, I need you to tell me how I'm supposed to do it.
Just did. You are. Remember, okay, I'll tell you about my broccoli story another time. But one thing I think I should get better at is the slow cooker. I'm really not good with that. That what do you call it? Appliance? Yeah, I'm not good with that.
Whatever. No, but you can't sleep on a crock pot. I'll throw things in a crock pot.
A lot of people do. Whenever mm-hmm. I try, it does not come out well.
You can throw, I'll put beans in a crock pot.
Girl, like red beans?
You can put beans in a crock pot.
Beef is a little tough. Beef can be hard.
No, I didn't say beef. Like you can put,
I know, but beans are good. Beans make sense.
Not New Orleans style red beans.
Yes, Tiff, New Orleans style red beans.
No, but they're. How they get creamy though? They're not creamy.
You mash. Yes, they are.
At the end, you can't just mash them at the end, and then the beans are creamy.
Yeah, you can. She's so great.
I repeat that.
But try it. You can. I try to do all kinds of time savings.
I need my Magnolite pot.
But you think about the amount of time I spend at home, right? There is no, I can't spend 3 hours on the stove.
Right.
No,
I can't spend 3 hours on the stove.
Slap a crock pot and set that joker for 6 hours and you're good to go.
That's why I got to get better with my crock pot. I have a,
the Ninja.
No, I have the pressure cooker.
Yeah.
With the slow.
Okay.
Pressure cooker's good. That's 45 minutes right there. You're good. Yeah.
Let me tell you the lies. This is why I bought it. Because they were like, you could cook something in 3 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever.
Yeah, no, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, because you got to let the steam release. But 10 or 15 minutes.
Girl, I gave my pressure cooker away when we moved down here.
I never had one. My mother used to have one.
I watched the infomercial on a pressure cooker and they got me buying that mess.
Me too. But
I do want you to use the crock pot more. You can put stuff in there.
I get into spurts where I really try, and then I don't know, the seasonings aren't right because I like to taste as I go.
But you can still taste.
You can.
Mm-hmm. You take the lid off and taste it in the middle.
You can do it.
Yeah,
in the middle.
Okay. Well, that's how you.
It's still cooking,
right?
That's how I cook on a stove. I didn't know you could do that in a crock pot, that you could taste it in the middle and stuff.
It's not the hard thing. It's not like it. So the difference is a pressure cooker, you can't do that because it lets the steam release and then you have to build up. That's not the same with a crock pot. You have a constant heat. It's a lower heat. It's the same thing with sous vide. Sous vide's a little different, right? Sous vide, when you have it in a bag, you can't taste it because you've got to put it in the bag.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of the sous vide stuff, if you're doing meats and stuff, that tenderize, you kind of season it afterward anyway. So, I mean, you're good.
I got to try. Crock pots
are great. I actually sold mine when I left Boston. I'm like, all right, I might need to go ahead and get another one because I'm tired of messing up my stove. It's all jacked up.
But nevertheless, the point is, this is all very time consuming. Either way, I'm going to pull that study so I can read it and see what they did. Kudos to eating well for
food. Now, that was good. Those were determinants of health. And we talked about food. Yeah, we talked about food insecurity is a major deal. It's a major deal for cancer patients.
I'm going to write a letter to them.
Good.
Thanking them for featuring this and adding my thoughts. See if they publish it in their next issue.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Three Black Docs is not intended as medical advice. All opinions are our own. Three Black Docs is produced by Winx Productions.